Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I want to take a minute off the top of the show here to say thank you so much for being with us all week long on Dog Nation Daily. Pre-recorded week, I've been on vacation, looking forward to being back in the regular chair on Monday with a regular episode of Dog Nation Daily. We hope you've had fun with what we have done this week. We've certainly had a good time bringing it to you, and I'll look forward to another really fun show today. I want to start the show by talking about the Georgia offense here for a few moments, and I want to go back to G-Day to do so. You know, at the time, Kirby Smart saw on that day what I think had to be a pretty good day for his wide receivers. However, in the attempt to potentially praise the receivers and talk about, you know, how they had performed, he did stop short in a couple regards, though. The notion that there's a go-to receiver, one guy that you can depend on above anybody else. Kirby Smart, upon reflecting throughout the entire spring, said maybe Georgia just doesn't quite have one of those guys right now.
I wouldn't say we got a go-to guy. No, I don't know that you've got a just dominant wideout. Now, I'll say this. What y'all saw today was the best showing that they've had as a unit from the 15 practices of spring. So you guys were all right that they've saved the world and they've all come about and they've been great. Where I was concerned coming into the game, after the game, I said, you know what, those guys played pretty good. I'm disappointed in some ball security issues. But I thought that they had to run after the catch. But, you know, I mean, we don't have as many DBs out there either. You know, so I think that all plays into it. But those guys competed now, and they played more physical this spring than they did last spring, which is what we challenged them to do.
So that may be true. It is certainly possible that in the brief glimpse of time and action that fans and media get to see on G-Day, that certain players played much better then than they'd played throughout the spring. That's obviously possible. However, most Georgia fans that left Sanford Stadium back during April were pretty happy with what they saw from the Georgia wide receivers. And it may even be that they have a slight different interpretation of the facts on the ground than Kirby Smart does. Kirby Smart says when he looks at the Georgia wide receivers, he doesn't see a go-to guy necessarily. He doesn't see one guy you can depend on above anybody else. But Chip Towers, Dog Nation insider, guy who covers the Dogs for a long time, when he saw a G-Day, he came up with a different take, that maybe Georgia does have a go-to guy, and that guy's name is Terry Godwin. Here's how Chip described that after G-Day.
I've heard nothing but really, really good stuff about Terry Godwin. I really expect Little T, as they call him down in the LaGrange way, to make significant strides this season. 130 yards he had in this game, and you know, I think he's going to be, by and large, the go-to guy. I mean, Kirby's saying they don't have a go-to guy, but, I mean, he's a guy you can depend on. You can do a lot of things with as well.
And in fairness to Kirby Smart, I think you would agree with a lot of what Chip said there. I mean, Kirby Smart spent a lot of the spring praising Terry Godwin, pretty clearly liked a lot what he saw from Godwin, and I think it's also fair to say that he liked Godwin a lot more in 2017, the 2017 version of that young man, a lot better than the guy that Kirby first encountered in 2016. It seemed like Godwin, who had done a lot after maybe being in the doghouse a little bit in Smart's first year, to maybe earn the trust from Kirby Smart in 2017. At least during the spring, Seth Emerson, that's a point that he seems to agree with.
I think so. He's doing the other things. I mean, Kirby Smart has talked about this and his blocking and that he's doing that better. But that may have been a little bit of the disappointing part last year was, yeah, Isaiah McKenzie and Terry Godwin are both shorter than they want in receivers. But if Godwin is able to help more in the blocking game and in other parts of it, then that kind of allows them to play both of those guys at the same time. And, you know, it's asking a lot for a Terry Godwin to block like a 6'4", 250-pound linebacker, but it's not asking for him to block a defensive back, any size defensive back. So I think that part of it is getting a little bit better from what I've heard. Leadership qualities, a little bit better. And, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is he is their most experienced receiver at this point, and so he's a guy that they're going to depend on, and they've been hoping that they could depend on him based on what they're seeing this spring, and so far this spring they like what they're seeing.
what Seth is referring to there is this notion that if you're not doing your job in terms of a blocker, you're not going to get a chance to catch the football. What did you got? You know, you got a block to get the rock. Wasn't that what Trey Blunt was famous for saying when he signed at Georgia? That was his mentality as a receiver. I think that's probably what Kirby Smart wants all of his receivers to have, that same mentality. You got to block to get the rock. You got to go out there and show your willingness to be physical. And then after that, we'll give you the football. So by Godwin doing more of that kind of stuff, being a leader also, the way that Seth talked about, I know that he was instrumental in tutoring McCole Hardman a little bit, for instance. So Godwin's willingness to do some of that kind of stuff does potentially set himself up for more success in 2017, which gets us to a pretty interesting number. And all of that, frankly, that I just said was sort of a setup for this. A couple of interesting numbers for Georgia in 2017 that have to be changed. And if you want to know ultimately if Georgia is a better team this year, then these numbers alone may tell that story. And one of them involves Terry Godwin. And the number, unfortunately, is the number zero. Do you know that Terry Godwin had zero touchdowns last year? And if you want to think just a simple measurement, a simple characteristic that would display improvement for Georgia this year in comparison to last year, wouldn't that really be it? I mean, wouldn't that number alone potentially tell you how much better Jacob Eason's doing, how much better the Georgia offense is doing? Can Georgia find some touchdowns for Terry Godwin? Now, I know that there might be a little bit of a pushback on this that, well, Godwin could find the end zone, but maybe in some of those cases he's only finding some of the scores that Isaiah McKenzie provided Georgia last year, so that it's maybe not a net gain. I realize that's a pushback, and that's potentially a pretty fair point to make, but I'm still going to say that I believe that Godwin's success could be predictive for team success for Georgia overall. Because, by the way, Godwin's zero in the touchdown column, not the only significant zero Georgia dealt with a year ago. Do you realize that Georgia, and this is mind-boggling, Georgia in a day and age where everybody's scoring a million points all the time, Georgia didn't have a 40-point game all season last year. Zero 40-point games for Georgia in 2016. That feels like, to me, another one of those zeros that's got to be eliminated for Georgia. And listen, I've got no problem with the identity that seems to be establishing itself for Georgia here this season. There seems to be a real growing excitement about the Georgia defense and kind of a return back to the great glory days of Art Russell's defensive coordinator and Brian Van Gorder in the early 2000s. That may be the kind of defense that Kirby Smart's built here this season. There's a lot of reason to think you could have a lot of good players on that side of the ball. But boy, you know, most Georgia fans don't want to see this thing be totally one-dimensional. They don't want to see this thing be totally led by the defense because they realize that the ability to score points is pretty paramount if you want to have the ultimate success. For instance, they saw Florida win the East 2 years in a row with a lot of defense, very little offense. What they saw was when that Florida team got to the SEC championship game, it couldn't do much with Alabama. And obviously Georgia fans want better for their own program. That's why we'll focus in on the offensive side of the ball. And those zeros that I just mentioned, zero touchdowns for Godwin a year ago, zero games with 40 points scored, those zeros have got to be eliminated. And if they are, Godwin contributing to the offense from the air, catching those touchdown passes, my guess is you're going to see a lot more points and probably a lot more wins for Georgia as well. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. No video for us today. We're not on Facebook Live. We'll be back on Monday on Facebook Live. Hope you'll watch us at 10 a.m. Thanks for checking us out in podcast form at DogNation.com, SoundCloud, iTunes. We love Dog Nation Daily as a podcast. We think it's probably the most convenient way to listen if you're working out, you're driving around. You know, certainly if you're not in the Athens area where we're on the radio at noon, anywhere in the world, we think podcast is a very convenient way to listen to the program. And for those of you who are in the Athens area, you want to check us out at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We appreciate you doing that. We love being on the radio in the classic city, and we are glad to have you with us on the program today. I will tell you that if you haven't done so already, please go to DogNation.com right there at the banner at the very top of the page. You'll see our R.S. Andrews Dog Nation Daily. It's actually not Dog Nation Daily. I just sort of inserted myself into that conversation. It's our R.S. Andrews Dog Nation Invasion giveaway for the big trip to South Bend. Your chance to win spot on the bus heading from Chicago over to South Bend this September. Also lodging, airfare, tickets. Your chance to win right now. Sign up for it at DogNation.com. It's brought to you by R.S. Andrews. And R.S. Andrews wants you to keep cool this summer no matter how hot it gets. R.S. Andrews is the home of the guaranteed $99 AC tune-up. And, you know, maybe you dodged a bullet last summer because it was a little bit mild. Don't bet on that happening again this year. The chances are it's going to be very hot. It's already been hot. And the chances are your air conditioning could go out on the hottest day of the summer unless you get a guaranteed R.S. Andrews $99 air conditioning tune-up. They're cleaned, screened, trained, and timely techs will give your system a thorough check, and they're going to guarantee it all summer. Don't let it slide. Call the ones I trust, R.S. Andrews, online at rsandrews.com. Also time for our Gator Hater Countdown, 126 days away. Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. Please check out shopdognation.com. You can get a Gator Hater t-shirt. Our good friend Ryan Fowler going to be on the show in just a few minutes. Ryan does a great podcast for us on seccountry.com. He knows the SEC. He's got some interesting thoughts on Georgia, some of them pretty candid, some of them pretty fun. We'll do all that with Ryan Fowler here coming up in a moment. Before I get to that, I did want to talk about the Georgia schedule here, both because of some of the things we've been saying in Dog Nation daily episodes of the recent past, and also because I like to look at the schedule this time of year. I feel like once you kind of get into that summer months and those preseason magazines are on the newsstand and you're really starting to look ahead to that upcoming year, you really start to focus in on the teams that your team's going to play and which ones are obviously tough, which ones may obviously be easy, and which ones might be a little tougher than they appear. And for Georgia this season, I think there are probably about three or so games that could be much tougher in real life than they appear to be on paper right now. And the reason why I select the three that I select is for the same reason. I think when you look at the Georgia schedule, what you see is you see a few tent pole games where obviously everybody's going to be up and everybody's going to be fired up and paying attention. And assuming the season goes well, that momentum will carry its way through. At Notre Dame in September, that's as big as it gets for Georgia national stage, a real chance to change the reputation from the program in the recent past by winning that game against Notre Dame that day. At Tennessee at the very end of the month on September the 30th, another game that all of Dog Nation is going to be paying attention to and most of the college football world will be paying attention to. The Florida game in October the 28th, by now y'all know what that one means to me and what I think it should mean to a Dog Nation. I don't have to explain that one anymore to you. Then the Auburn game on November the 11th on the road, very much the same way. If we said, hey, what are the four most important games for Georgia this season, I just about imagine every single Georgia fan listening right now would say those four games. Maybe another game kind of mixed in the conversation here and there, but boy, that's really a stretch. The four that I just mentioned are the big four for Georgia this year. But here's the tricky thing, though. What happens the week after that? And for me, it's the week after the big game. Sometimes that's the most telling when it comes to a college football team. Because only the best teams can play well 1, 2, 3 weeks in a row. You know, any team can go out there and have one good game. That's a fluke. That's what that word means. It's the kind of thing that happened once. It's not likely to happen again. But to repeat those performances week after week, you're the best of the best. You're in that college football playoff type conversation. So while the most important, most interesting games for Georgia are the ones that I just mentioned, the potentially tougher than they appear type games are the ones that come the week after that. Let me give you a quick for instance. Saturday, October the 7th, Georgia at Vanderbilt. I've got Vanderbilt among the two or three worst teams in the SEC this season. Zach Cunningham is gone. Shouldn't be much reason to fear Vanderbilt. But there's not normally a reason to fear Vanderbilt either. Georgia still struggled back there in 2015, though. That was a pretty ugly game for the Dogs that day. A lot of Georgia teams have kind of sleptwalked their way through a game in Nashville. This year, given the fact that it comes the week after, a game where a lot of emotion will be spent against Tennessee could make that Vanderbilt game a little bit tough. I think the same thing is probably true for the home game Georgia's going to play against South Carolina on November the 4th. That's the week after the game against Florida. I think the Florida game is going to be one of those absolute bloodbaths where there's going to be a lot of energy left out there on that football field. Now, if Georgia wins that game, the atmosphere in Sanford Stadium the following Saturday is going to be pretty hype. But South Carolina, who a lot of the experts are telling you are potentially a little better than they look on paper, that game could be tougher in real life than it appears on paper because of where it falls on the Georgia schedule the week after the game against Florida. And then I'll also add one more to this conversation. It'll be Saturday, November 18th, Senior Day, I guess, in Sanford Stadium for Georgia, the week after the road game at Auburn. Kentucky could be a team that's just legitimately good. Believe it or not, Mark Stoops has actually been recruiting a little better up in Lexington than you might realize. The week after Auburn, depending on how that game goes, especially if it's a dramatic win for Georgia, maybe Kentucky doesn't have the Dogs' full attention the following week, if you get my drift. So we'll have to see how those work out. The big games for Georgia, obviously the one's going to get the most attention. But pay a little attention as well to those games that come the week after some of those big games. Vanderbilt on the road, South Carolina, Kentucky. Maybe no reason to obviously fear them. But in terms of how the SEC schedule works out, chances are one of those teams could give Georgia a little closer game than a lot of Dog fans might hope. It is great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Thanks for making another fun week for us. Hope you enjoy Ryan Fowler right now. And we'll say hello to our good friend, Ryan Fowler. Does a great job on the Alabama podcast for SECCountry.com. You can also find him on the radio there in Tuscaloosa as well each and every day. Ryan, hope your summer is doing great and glad to have you back on Dog Nation Daily. How you doing?
Hey, no doubt, and looking forward to talking a little SEC Alabama football with you.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, too, and I won't pull the wool over the eyes of the audience here. We are pre-recording this. It's going to run during the vacation week here. So as we're talking on this particular day, we're only about 12 hours or so after former Auburn coach Pat Dye has, you know, gone on radio, goes on the Feinbaum show and says, you know, you give Auburn 500 years of, you know, time to catch up. It's not going to match the history of Alabama. What has that done, by the way, for the sort of situation on the ground for the Iron Bowl rivalry there in Alabama? I imagine that stirs the pot a little more.
Well, you know, it gives us a lot of conversation pieces when you look at what he said. And Coach Dye is always strong opinions. I know this is going to sound crazy, being a you know, former Georgia player. Auburn is Ty's as far as coach. We feature him every week in Tuscaloosa. We feature Coach Dye. So I'm always prepared for these unique statements that he makes coming out. And but this one grabs you a little bit, and I think it's the truth. I mean, when you look at Alabama's 16 national titles, 26 SEC titles, 124 first-team All-Americans, 66 postseason appearances, 36 postseason wins, and just about 3 weeks ago, Brandon, you could spin it a lot of different ways. You could talk about how bad they feel sorry for Missouri. You could talk about how them living in the SEC East is unfair and all these different things that we discussed. But at the end of the day, Auburn was trying to run from Alabama. And what I thought was so different about this is when I first heard Pat Dye on my show make this statement, I went, are you kidding? Really? I mean, is that really what he's trying to do? And then I followed it back up the week later after I spent some time, and I asked him point blank. I said, Coach, the perception is that you're trying to run from Alabama. And he denied it. And then the next week it was SEC spring meetings down in Sandestin, and then Jay Jacobs. And Gus actually backed it up and said, you know, that they were trying to move to the SEC East. So Auburn's had a really bad offseason. We talk about publicity. They are really playing that little brother role very, very well.
And then you also add to that what happened a couple of weeks ago. John Adams, and this is a columnist, this is not a, you know, former coach or sort of an official, you know, program guy, but, you know, he makes the suggestion that maybe Alabama and Tennessee shouldn't play each other every year. First of all, apart from the sort of divorce from history and sort of common sense about what history has been, it almost seems like another example of maybe one of Alabama's chief rivals saying, maybe we don't have to play the Crimson Tide each and every year anymore.
What I read John Adams' article. Matter of fact, I talked with Mike Griffith just a few days ago on our podcast.
I'm sure that was quite a conversation.
Oh, Mike's always great. Listen, Mike can deliver a lot of great home runs. We talked about this, and he had some great commentary. I don't want to ever see Alabama Tennessee, because that third Saturday of October, that's Alabama Tennessee game. To me, it's the oldest rivalry from an Alabama perspective. I know you've got Auburn and Georgia, and that's older than Alabama and Tennessee. But this one is very, very special. I don't want us to ever see that go away. But, Brandon, the key here that we need to talk about is I never thought that we would have people talking about trying to run from Alabama. You know, and this is probably not going to go well, you know, on your show, but Nick Saban has created this gap that he's up here when we talk about coaches, and the rest of the league is down here, like 2 through 14, and you could debate where everybody fits in. But I never thought that we would be discussing people trying to run from Alabama. Alabama lost, 9 years in a row to Tennessee. Auburn beat them six times in a dark days of Alabama football. I never once woke up and read an article from a columnist or a guy that covers Alabama and says, you know, let's get away from Tennessee. Let's get away from Auburn. And maybe that's because Nick Saban said a couple of days ago that he's not going anywhere, that he's going to be coaching here for a while, and maybe that's creating some backup plans for some of these ADs to try to find a way to get away from Alabama. Maybe they don't feel like they can compete with Nick Saban.
Well, let's talk about Georgia for a moment, because when we have a guy on who knows the SEC well but doesn't necessarily come from inside the perspective of sort of the Dog Nation bubble, we're always curious about what those kind of folks have to say, including yourself. You take a look at what Georgia brings back for 27, where it might compare to the rest of the SEC East, potential opponent for Alabama in the SEC championship game. What do you make of Kirby Smart in Georgia going into his second year with second-year quarterback Jacob Eason and the entire nine yards?
You look at Georgia here for just a couple of minutes and you think about Kirby Smart, getting a chance to know him a little bit here in Tuscaloosa. I don't think he's there when I talk about the top tier of SEC coaches yet. I think he will be. If you and I have this conversation 3 or 4 years from now, I think we'll be talking that Kirby Smart will be in this conversation. I don't think he's there right now. So I still have questions of the growing pain. You learn a lot when you talk about coaches at his age taking over programs that have a ton of history. And Georgia certainly got that. So I want to know more about his coaching style. You make mistakes. You know, you look at Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma at 33. You know, we featured Coach Stallings a few days ago at 29. He took over Texas A&M. And I asked him about that. What's the challenges of taking Kirby? How old is Kirby? Is he even, well, what would you say? I don't even know the exact age.
That's a great question. I'm not entirely sure. He's a good-looking man, whatever age he is. He keeps himself in pretty good shape.
He's a younger coach.
Sure.
With his first head coaching job, you learn on the job. And the SEC is a rough place to sort of train when we talk about, you know, coaching, and you make mistakes. So I want to know more about, when I look at Kirby Smart, I think it, what is it, 17, 18, 19 of the 22, depends on how you count them, is coming back.
Yeah.
I want to see more from that program, from a coaching, you know, how's he going to make decisions? Because I think you would probably admit, and I think most of the Dog fans would probably admit, there was a couple of games that probably should have went the other way.
Sure.
With a veteran coach. And you want to see how that he works those out, those intangibles, you know. When you got to make that crazy decision, certainly he's trained from the best, but can he apply that is going to, I think, be the big question going into the season. And I expect coming up in about, you know, a couple of weeks when we all meet in Hoover, where will Georgia fit in the SEC East? Because right now it's a 50-50 split with everybody I talk to with Florida and Georgia.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to hear that split. It seems like with obviously Florida getting Malik Zaire, their stature may be growing a little bit. Of course, they are replacing a lot on defense. But let me go back to something else that you said a moment ago, or at least you kind of alluded to this. You know, you saw Nick Saban his second year win the SEC West after having a really kind of a very mediocre first year in 2007. Here at Georgia, we saw Mark Richt win the SEC in 2002 after only having an 8-win season in 2001. And I think one of the things that for a lot of Georgia fans, and I'm certainly curious about this myself, is kind of taking a look at commonalities there between Saban and between Richt in those second years, that big sort of burst onto the scene moment. You know, what do those seasons have in common? What did maybe Smart learn from Saban in 2008? Is there something about what Richt did in 2002 that can be copied? Because pretty clearly we saw two pretty mediocre first seasons kind of fast-tracked to pretty big-time success in year two.
Well, and let's go back here, because knowing Mark Richt a little bit, I featured him on my show here, and obviously I cover Alabama. So when you look at Alabama and you look at, you know, getting a chance to – he was one of my favorite coaches. I'll just be honest with you. When I look at Mark Richt, high-character guy, you know, I thought Georgia might have pulled the plug a little bit too soon. But you think about that culture that he created. That was a transition from Mark Richt's style and his personality, and knowing Kirby Smart the way that we do in Tuscaloosa, they are almost polar opposites when you talk about intensity and sort of the way they do things. It takes a little bit, and I think a guy that I know you've got a lot of contacts with Mike Johnson. You do the SEC Country podcast with him.
Sure.
Talk about that transition. When you talk about, because he was part of the Shula staff, and then Saban come in and sold it. And he's told me multiple times, it takes a little bit of time to buy into what they're doing. Kirby Smart implementing a system. I think in year number two, now the players go, okay, I get it. I get what he's trying to do. You know, you walk in, if Nick Saban walked into Georgia, I think it would take a couple of years to go, okay, we know what the process is, and I assume that's what, you know, Kirby Smart implemented with his own personal touches. The players don't buy in from day one, and I think only players can probably help us understand that. But there's a bunch that we've talked to. Nick Saban couldn't get it initially. That 2017, you know, they lost games they probably shouldn't have lost. But when you look back and you think about, okay, they were building a dynasty, all I can say to Georgia fans, just be patient, because we know the system that he's putting in, it works. It works. It's proven to work over in the SEC West. It will work in the SEC East. And I think Kirby Smart in year number two will begin laying that foundation for something building in Athens. And you just got to stay patient and trust what Nick Saban says, the process.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
It is time for your SEC Through, and of course, make sure you check out SEC Country Live each and every Monday through Thursday on the SEC Country Facebook page. And also, I know you're like me. As summer rolls on, you're getting excited about the Dog Nation invasion to South Bend this September. Many of you are coming with us on that. We're excited about that. And of course, one of the sponsors that brings it all to you is Marlowe's. By the way, we got some really fun stuff in terms of announcements coming up about how we're going to be connecting with Marlowe's in the very near future. You're going to really, really like this. But we're really glad to have Marlowe's on the way to South Bend with us for the Dog Nation invasion. Of course, we want you to be in the know at Marlowe's. That means sign up to be a Marlowe's insider to receive exclusive offers and event invitations. Text Marlowe's at 24242 today. And also, don't forget, fall in love with Marlowe's Sunday brunch at select Marlowe's locations, because brunch, it's what's for breakfast and lunch. Or if you're like me, I probably at a certain point in my life have squeezed in a brunch in between a breakfast and a lunch. I've probably been known to do that before. So, listen, no judgments here around Dog Nation, right? All right. So, last day of the week, been looking ahead to the upcoming season, gave you my official predictions for the SEC West on Thursday. Here on this Friday, the final day of my vacation, I'll be back with you live on Monday, of course. On the final day of my vacation here, I want to give you my official picks for the SEC East. Now, it is probably not a surprise that I have Georgia number one on my list, because I've been talking about this for a while, and also because I am, after all, the host of Dog Nation Daily. But I'd like to think that there's another reason other than just that, that I've picked Georgia to win the SEC East. And I think when you do that kind of side-by-side comparison with Georgia and the team that people assume that is the other potential contender in the East, Florida, I think there are reasons to like Georgia. Now, of course, listen, when I do SEC Country Live, I hear from these Florida fans all the time, and they love nothing more than touting their long winning streak against the Georgia Bulldogs. And they assume that what happened in the past is a guarantee of what's going to happen in the present, or in the very near future in this case. And I think in this respect, Florida fans are probably sadly mistaken. Because, listen, you bring in Malik Zaire, that may be an upgrade over what Florida had before, but it should not be an upgrade in comparison to what Jacob Eason should be for Georgia, or in the event he gets hurt or something weird happens, Jake Fromm as well. I mean, I'll leave Fromm out of this for now, look mostly at the side-by-side comparison between Eason and Zaire. Jacob Eason's probably going to be the better quarterback. He needs to be the better quarterback. But this is a guy that's going to have had more experience by that point in time, better overall prospect coming out of high school. It's sort of a head-to-head matchup between the two quarterbacks. I think you ought to take Eason over Zaire. I think he outplays him in the game. I think he outplays him for the season. The other thing is with Florida, the work that McElwain failed to do in recruiting from 2015 and 2016, I think it haunts him on defense this year. With so many losses in the secondary, including those two outstanding cornerbacks, with Anzalone gone and Jared Davis gone, new defensive coordinator, that is just a lot for Florida to have to replace right there. I don't see Florida, you know, at one point in time I had Florida as about a 7-5 team for the upcoming season. They get Zaire. I'll give them an extra win for that, maybe an extra score per game. They probably find 8-4 in the regular season, but I think it takes more than that to win the East this year. I got Georgia winning this division by about a 10-2 regular season mark. As far as after Florida, this is where things get a little funky for me. I got South Carolina 3rd and Kentucky 4th. I love what Mark Stoops is doing there with the Wildcats, and I talked early in the week about the work that I think Will Muschamp's doing at South Carolina. I think both of those somewhat traditional bottom feeders in the SEC East are better this year. And if you notice, I have them being better than Tennessee. And this is not, you know, a troll job. This is not me trying to, you know, have some fun at the Vols' expense. I legitimately look at that Tennessee roster and wonder, who's going to get it done for the Vols? You know, is John Kelly at running back? Is he a capable replacement for what you had last year with Jalen Hurd? Alvin Kamara, a running back that I really liked. Is John Kelly that kind of guy? We talked earlier in the week about, you know, finding receivers to go along with Juwan Jennings. Is that going to happen? I think there's a chance that, you know, Dormady or Garantano, whoever wins the job, you know, there's a chance that guy's as good as Joshua Dobbs. I don't think Dobbs is necessarily a world beater. But the overall Tennessee offense, there's a reason why you've overhauled every single one of those coaches, because this was a group that was not getting it done last year. And then on defense, boy, when healthy, you were really impressed by a lot of those Tennessee starters last season. But those guys are gone. The replacements, the guys that could step up and play well in their stead, those names are not obvious, and that's why I have Tennessee below them on the list. After that, I got Missouri 6, Vanderbilt 7. Those are my picks for the SEC East, and that is your SEC through. I want to wrap up the show by reminding you that this is my vacation week. That means as you listen to the show right now, I am probably on the beach, lathered in sunscreen. And I know that's probably a difficult image to get out of your head, but nonetheless, that's what I'm doing right now. But do want to let you know, though, that even though I'm not here, we do have a great week of Dog Nation Daily. That means if you listen to us in podcast form or on the radio, we're still delivering shows each and every day and really bringing back some fun guests. Some really good stuff coming up from Jim Donnan this week. Our good friend Barrett Salee hasn't been with us for a while. He's going to be here. Benjamin Wolt, we'll still talk some recruiting on the show, get kind of a landscape for where things land on 2018. And, of course, we'll welcome back Ryan Fowler as well, who we have not had on Dog Nation Daily in quite some time. So that's all coming up this week. If you're hearing me now later in the week, check out DogNation.com. You can hear all of those interviews in their entirety. And, of course, I look forward to being back with you again live on Monday. Big thank you for being with us each and every day. Thanks for listening to Dog Nation Daily.